dealing with the first topic in the field of soteriology, namely the plan of salvation, and I have tried the last hour to give you some defense, some apology for the discussion of such a topic in terms of the order of the divine decrees. And I have given you a biblical example of order in the eternal counsel of God. And that is concerned with Ephesians 1:5, in love having predestinated us unto the adoption of children by Jesus Christ unto himself. So I think we must recognize that there is a certain order of divine thought, a certain order of divine purpose. Now, if you take an example derived from what is central in our Christian faith, the central fact of our Christian faith, that Christ came to die and rise again. He came into the world to die on the cross and to rise again from the dead. Now that is surely the central fact of our Christian faith. Now, if it is the central fact of our Christian faith, it is the central fact also in God's plan of salvation, isn't it? The central fact in the plan of salvation. And we ask the question then, what relations does this great central fact sustain? To other elements of God's purpose. How does it stand relating? Must have relations. It's not an abstract truth. It's a truth standing in relation. And I think you would at least have to see this. That God set his love upon the children of man. He set his love upon the children of men. And there is an ultimate of divine revelation and an ultimate of the counsel of God. No one can go back further than that. God set his love upon lost men. In his eternal counsel. That's indisputable, sure. Then second, because he set his love upon lost men, he decreed their salvation. Salvation in the counsel of God is surely the fruit of his love. Then third, he decreed to send the Son in order to secure his salvation. Surely you have therefore an order of thought, don't you? I don't see how that can be called into question. Love, decree of salvation, and the means of accomplishing and securing that salvation. When you are in the realm of the divine counsel, Now let us get into the subject of brief historical review. The organized Christian church, as I indicated last week, last Friday, is supernaturalistic in its view of salvation. The organized Christian church professes that it is God that saves. And the first great cleavage that enters into organized Christianity is concerned particularly with the question, how does God save? How does God save? And the answer to that question divides the Christian church into sacerdotalists and evangelicals. Divides them into sacerdotalists and evangelicals. And that is the first great cleavage in the field of soteriology. Now, what do sacerdotalists do? Sacerdotalists say that God has deposited his saving power in the institute of the church. He deposits his saving power in the institute of the church. And that salvation comes to men who this intermediary. That in a nutshell. Now what it pertains to the plan of salvation, the sacerdotalist position can be summed up as follows. First, that God, by an antecedent conditional wills the salvation of all men. By antecedent conditional will, he determines this, he wills the salvation of all men. And then second, in accordance with that antecedent will, he sends forth his Son to make satisfaction for the sins of all men. The sins of all men, and the atonement therefore has reference not to individuals but to the whole human race. Third, by a consequent and absolute decree, he determines the salvation of those whom he foresees will become the participants of salvation through the sacraments. God determines the salvation of those whom he foresees will become the participants of this salvation deposited in the church through the sacraments. And then you see you have the order of the divine decrees on this sacerdotalist scheme. Let me remind you that in stating this in terms of the order of the divine decrees, it is generally prefaced, the statement of the order is generally prefaced by what is decreed concerning the cosmos, you see, the decree to create, the tree to permit to fall in order to give a certain cosmic context to what is concerned, particularly with salvation. The decree to create and the decree to permit the fall don't really fall within soteriology. They don't fall within the plan of salvation. They fall within the cosmic plan. But in order just to give a context to the decrees which are concerned with salvation, generally in theology, you start with creation. And then the decree with reference to the fall. So that's the decree to create, second decree to permit the fall. Then third, the decree to make satisfaction for the sins of all by the sacrifice of Christ. Decree to make satisfaction for the sins of all by the sacrifice of Christ. Fourth, decree to institute the church as the depository of salvation and the sacraments as the means. Institute the church as the depository of salvation and the sacraments as the means. Then five, decree to predestinate to salvation those whom he foresees will receive the sacraments and persevere in them. Decree to predestinate. You want me to go back further than that?
I've lost it.
Oh, you've lost it completely. Well, you see, that's intentional on my part, because I want you to drive you to the plan of salvation by being the war for you. Well, let me go over this first one a little more slowly. Decree to create. Decree to permit to fall. Decree to send Christ to make satisfaction for the sins of all. Send Christ to make satisfaction for the sins of all. Four, decree to institute the church as the depository of salvation, the sacraments as the means. Five, decree to predestinate to salvation all those whom he foresees will receive the sacraments and persevere in their use. And then the decree to sanctify and glorify all those who are thus predestinated. Decree to sanctify and glorify all those thus predestinated. Predestination, you see, at once is conditioned upon his foresight, what will actually occur in the unfolding of history. Now, of course, the sacerdotalists are the Roman Catholics, and the Eastern Orthodox, and the High Anglicans, we generally call them. The Roman Catholics, the Eastern Orthodox, and the High Anglicans. Historically speaking. Well then, what about the evangelicals? They say their characteristic banner is that God saves by direct operations of his grace upon the persons who are saved. He saves by direct operations of his grace upon those who are saved. But again, the evangelicals differ among themselves, and they differ among themselves particularly on the question. Of the diversity in the issues of salvation. The diversity among men in respect of salvation, diversity in the issues of salvation, diversity among men in respect of salvation. How are we going to explain this diversity? Some are saved, some are not saved. What is the explanation of the difference? Well, that puts the evangelicals into two main camps, the universalists and the particularists. Won't be great universalism in this discussion with the doctrine of universal salvation. It's used in an entirely different context, has a different denotation and connotation on the current use of the word universalist. Universalists today are understood to be those who believe that ultimately all men will be saved. It's not being used in that sense in this discussion. A different part of the discussion. The universalists and the particularists. Now the universalists, they say that God does not make men to differ. Men make themselves to differ. Men make themselves to differ. And the diversity, therefore, is to be praised. Not to any differentiation in God's saving operations. Not in any differentiation that there is in God's saving operations. In the difference of response on the part of man. Difference of response on the part of man. They say that what God does, looking to salvation, He does on behalf of all and in all indiscriminately. On behalf of all and in all indiscriminately until men themselves. Contribute. That decisive factor which issues in salvation. And they contribute that decisive factor. Now, who are the universalists in terms of this discussion? They are, we'll take them in this order, Lutherans, Evangelical Lutherans, Arminians, that's classic Arminians, and Evangelical Arminians. Dr. Walton doesn't classify the Arminians, the Protestant Arminians, with the universalists in this case. But I'm a little more generous at that point than B.B. Warren. I think it's simply true at this point. These are the three groups of universalists within what we call the evangelical or Protestant camp. Now, I said a moment ago that in each case, these evangelicals, these universalist evangelicals, consider the decisive factor to reside in man himself. And the Lutheran places in non-resistance, that's the decisive factor. The Arminians, the Protestant Arminians, put it in cooperation. And the evangelical Arminians in improvement, that is the improvement of grace. Now let us take a look at the Lutherans first of all, and summarize their view of salvation. The Lutherans, evangelical Lutherans, they have this conception of God's plan of salvation. First of all, from general benevolence, voluntas generalis, from general benevolence, God wills and intends the salvation of all. He wills and intends the salvation of all. That is, remember, voluntas generalis. Wills and intends the salvation of all. Second, to give effect to that purpose, he sends his Son to make satisfaction for all the sins of all men. Then he decrees to give to all men the means of salvation. And then four, you have his voluntas specialis. Whereby he predestinates to salvation those whom he foresees will not resist the means of grace and will therefore repent and believe. The means of grace, particularly the word, has inherent in itself saving power, and it is always efficacious when it does not meet with an obstacle.
Always at the case is going to be just in time.
Consequently, if there is no resistance in the person, the means of grace,
if I may use the same as the means of grace,
is invariably effective. So, the order of the divine decrees on this Lutheran scheme is as follows. The order of the divine decrees is the decree to create, to see the decree to permit the fall which is common to all schemes except the supernatural which is in it. Decree to create, decree to permit the fall. Then you have an all-important decree by universal antecedent conditional decree. Universal antecedent conditional decree. He wills and intends the salvation of all. Then fold in accordance with that antecedent will. He decrees, God decreed to send Christ to make satisfaction for the sins of the whole world. By special, consequent, unconditional decree, conditional decree, he predestinates to eternal life all those whom he foresees will not resist. Then six, the decree to sanctify and glorify all those thus predestinated. Now a word about the Remonstrant Arminian scheme, just a summary of the anthropology that lies back of it. He is to sanctify and glorify all that is predestinated. Now a word about the Remonstrant Arminian scheme, just a summary of the anthropology that lies back of it. The Remonstrant Arminian scheme. First, all men fell in Adam and derived from him moral corruption by which they are disposed to sin. That corruption is called hereditary depravity. Hereditary depravity. Or inherited depravity. Then second, this depravity does not, however, deprive all men does not deprive man of all ability to good. A certain ability is essential to the nature of man and is therefore retained
in spite of the fall, but in spite of this inherited depravity. Hence, in virtue of that naturally retained ability, man is able to assist and cooperate in his own salvation. It is not, however, sufficient. For salvation, consequently, God has given to all men sufficient grace. And those who cooperate with this sufficient grace are saved. They cooperate. And third and finally, those whom God foresees will cooperate and persevere. He predestinates to salvation. Now you find the order of the divine decrees. In war, if you have not way to give them, you can reproduce them for yourself. Perhaps with a little variation from what I would have done, but nevertheless, essentially the same. Now we come to the evangelical Arminian, the Wesleyan Arminian. The Wesleyan or evangelical Arminian. Very important to note the distinction between evangelical Arminianism and Remonstrant Arminianism. First, in this scheme, all men fell in Adam. And by nature, all men are totally depraved. And totally unable to do anything towards their own salvation. Totally depraved and totally unable to do anything towards their own salvation. By reason of the fall in Adam. Once the Arminians can say that. Then second, so all men are condemned in Adam and are totally depraved. Yes, Christ comes to sustain to all men. A certain saving relationship. Christ comes to sustain to all men a certain saving relationship. They are all delivered from the guilt of Adam's first sin. And are endowed with sufficient grace and ability. That is, they are endowed with a certain principle of life implanted in the soul. sufficient grace, the key term of grace. Third, this ability is not naturally retained ability, but graciously restored ability. Graciously restored. All men are naturally totally depraved and totally in evil. All men are sufficient grace, therefore graciously restored to them. For all who improve with sufficient grace are saved. All who improve with sufficient grace are saved. Now improve is here you. In the more technical sense. You buy a house and it's pretty dilapidated and you improve it, well, that's 1 million of the work is broken for the remedy. That's not the sense in which it's used in this discussion. It's used in the sense of improving an opportunity, improving the trip, taking advantage of it.
Why
is
improvement
with faith in that? Yes. All who improve this sufficient grace take advantage of it, cultivate it, are saved. Five, finally, the diversity in the issues arises from this improvement in the case of some and non-improvement in the case of others. Non-improvement in the case of others. Well, I'll give you the order of the divine decrees on this. The order of the divine decrees then would be as follows. Decree to create, decree to permit the fall, decree to send Christ to make satisfaction for the sins of all, decree to send Christ to make satisfaction for the sins of all, to secure remission of original guilt. This is three. To send Christ to make satisfaction for the sins of all. To secure the remission of original guilt for all. And secure sufficient grace. Then four, the decree to remit the guilt of Adam's sin. And to give to all sufficient grace. Then five, decree to save all who improve this grace. Six, decree to predestinate to eternal life those whom he foresees will improve and persevere in that improvement. Decree to predestinate all those whom he foresees will improve and persevere, and then finally decree to sanctify and glorify all those who are thus predestinated. spirit now.
Sir?
Yes.
It seems on the surface that number 4 and 5 on the webinar are many of them that quite contradictory to item 1. They're totally unable to do anything for their own purposes. Can you clarify that a little bit?
And therefore, by nature, they are totally depraved, totally unable. And as they are natively, naturally, they are not able to do anything towards their own salvation. On that particular point, evangelical opinion would be theoretically a Calvinistic as any Calvinist. Openly depraved, not able therefore to do a thing towards their own salvation. Nevertheless, God in His grace comes along and remits the original guilt of having sinned to all, gives a graciously restored ability to all, and that's called sufficient grace. Now, since there is that universal grace, men are all men without any exception, put in an entirely different category from what they are by nature. And therefore, in view of that, if they improve that sufficient grace, they will be saved. Now, what is your question?
It seems that it's quite contradictory between those two things. You say that at some point God gives this grace.
Yes. Well, He gives it to them all. He gives it to them all whenever they come into the world, whenever they begin to exist. It's not at a point in their onward course of development, but everyone at the very beginning of his existence is given this permission and
sense grace.
Yes? Sense grace. Oh no, I don't know if they reflect on that, but I can say whatever according to their principles it applies to all men everywhere, from the beginning of the world to the end of the world. Yes.
Where do they get support from that biblical?
From their
bosses?
Oh, yeah. one of the chief texts is Romans 5:18. That is one of the chief reports of this evangelical gospel. Judgment came upon all men of condemnation, all judgment comes upon all men of justification of life. And they interpret the contrast involved as equally universal. That's one of the chief results. That's the characteristic of Jesus of that particular passage. Now, your difficulty is, well, now, how do these two things square with one another? Well, you see, that's the big question in evangelical humanism. Granted, you see that there is the remission of original guilt. Granted that there is this graciously restored ability, this sufficient grace. Nevertheless, the person must improve it. Whence comes that improvement? Whence comes it? If the person is naturally, natively, totally depraved and totally unable, whence comes this improvement? That is the real question.
and it's a question I can't answer for you. I don't think that on evangelical Arminianism there is any adequate answer to that, because it must proceed from the initiated of the person concerned, and it's not explained by the great, by the remission of original guilt or the sufficient grace with which all are endowed. There has to be some other factor there, proceeding from the person himself, that is not explained by the bestowment of grace. And there I think you're back upon the sovereign initiative of the person himself. That's my answer to your question. But that is not what I'm particularly interested in now, just the service. Now we come to the... let's go on.
Okay, I just want to ask you, D.B. Warfield seemed to feel that Luther was a good Calvinist. He seemed to lose
Yes, Luther himself.
Then, is that a change in Lutheranism and then...
We have... This is classic evangelical Lutheranism, which does not necessarily represent Luther himself at all. It was a syncretism, a synergism that entered into evangelical Lutheranism subsequent to Luther himself. And it is with that he has to do the classic evangelical Arminian theologian. And like Gerhard Fenstedt and so on, Hollis, in these things. And you find this in that excellent summary of Lutheranism by the doctrinal theology of the Evangelical Lutheran Church, and you'll discover that position there summarized for you on the basis of quotations from the classic Lutheran theologian. Now what we have to do with is this classic Lutheran position, and not with perhaps individual Lutherans who may be very much further away than classic Lutheranism is, or near classic Lutheran position. Now we come to the particular, and there the banner is that God saves by direct operations of his grace upon the heart of man and the persons who are saved, and that God makes men to differ. That's the hallmark of particular, classic Calvinism, if you wish, that God makes men to differ. Stated more fully, that is, that God, in his saving operation, does not work equally and indiscriminately on behalf of all men. But he does not work equally and indiscriminately on behalf of all men. God makes men to differ, and he makes men to differ simply in the exercise of his sovereign will. So that there is sovereign differentiation, sovereign discrimination. That's the hallmark of particular. Remember, that applies to all particulars. God makes men sovereign differentiation and now, but there are
in these classes of particulars too. You have first of all the supralapsarian, you have the infralapsarian, and you have the Amaralian. Another fourth class is Dr. Orson has, but I'm not bothered with that. Particularly the supralapsarian, the infralapsarian, and the Amaralian. And they differ among themselves, not on this general principle that God makes men to deserve it, not at all. But where in the order of the divine decrees does this differentiation enter? Where in the order of the divine decrees does this differentiation first enter? That gives you the key to the difference in these three classes of particulars.